The following is a special presentation of WCHL News. Now, a WCHL News special with Jim Hebner and UNC Chancellor Carol Folt. Chancellor Folt has officially been on the job for 4 months. And in a four-part series, you'll hear, in a wide range of topics, what the Chancellor has been doing in the early days as leader of North Carolina's flagship university. Now, we conclude WCHL's News special with Jim Hebner and UNC Chancellor Carol Folt. Here's the fourth and final part of the conversation.
Chancellor Folt, all of the transgressions that we talked about in our earlier parts of the interview occurred before you got here, but you've inherited a job of managing the cleanup of them in the FM scandal aftermath and the issues with athletics. What lessons do you think that you personally or that the institution should have learned from these or should have learned?
I think they've done a lot of work. The with the accrediting panel coming back and looking at all the new processes were put in place following the academic issues with the FM. Lots of changes were made. I think people learned a lot about that and are excited about the changes. They feel like they have something in place that they're proud of and they can see things move forward in a positive way. I think that's the same in the athletics department. There are a number of recommendations from the Rawlings panel, for example, that Carolina had already put in place, some of them years ago, some of them more recently, for example, making sure that all the medical care was not under the athletics department but was under different control, just like our academic advising is now moved all the way under our provost office. So in some ways, I think people used these disappointments and these very difficult times, some of them very very troubling, to really make changes that were positive. And they're engaged in them. The people on campus helped design those processes. And so their success is much more likely because of that.
It was under multiple chancellors that the FM department was running these bogus courses. And so when we begin to step into that, it's hard to tell whether that was an issue that I think we would hope that that was just an issue that would involve two people, the chair of the department and the administrator. But nonetheless, that did happen. Can you tell us what controls have been put in place to ensure the integrity of the academic side of things that you're involved in? And how confident are you that they're effective enough that we won't have that happen again?
Well, Jim, this is pretty early for me to tell you all the details. They've all been outlined. I know they've been reported on in the paper quite a few times. But they've put in a lot of oversight, how many independent projects are being done by a single person, the way that's followed through in the department, the way that then goes from the department up to the dean. So there's many, many checks and balances now in place that are observed on a term-by-term basis and reported on with metrics to follow. I think that's what they feel very good about that. And every single dean feels a sense of responsibility to hold to that standard. I think the flip side of all that is, of course, it wasn't taking place in all the other or in any other place that we know of on campus. Sometimes one really distressing, bad set of happenings become the poster child for the way the institution is working, and of course that was not the case. In most cases, the processes were safe. In most cases, people were doing all the oversight and management you could ever possibly want. So it isn't a case of changing everything. It's a case of just being even more vigilant to look for those one or two bad apples that are there and make sure that you find them.
We, of course, are always most interested in what's happening in our family, in our town, in our university. But after all this surfaced, it has occurred to me to wonder if there's anyone out there who's has a best practices study on this. Do you know whether this has happened in other schools? Is this, have you any report of this happening in other places? Did you ever have anything like this at Dartmouth?
We didn't have anything specifically like this. I think every school has had its own examples of cheating scandal. I mean, there are things that happen in academics and everybody's aware of them, and usually they're the very rare example, and they do everything possible to put things in place to stop it ever happening again. I know that one of the ways people think about it, though, is let's get everything in place so they never do happen. You don't want it to have to be reactive. So when people address something like what happened here in Chapel Hill, they've put in place ways to prevent this happening that now affect all courses. So you use it as an opportunity to become preventive as well. But I don't know of another exact example.
Now, you are facing, for the first time in our history, you're coming to North Carolina to be the chancellor here for the first time in history with our first legislature that's all Republican and very conservative. Governor McCrory has excoriated the educational elite who he says dominate the schools, and he's obviously pointing at Chapel Hill. He says the schools teach worthless courses that offer no chances of people getting jobs. This was in a national radio interview, got a lot of attention. He said there was a major disconnect between what skills are taught at the state's public universities and what businesses want out of colleges. And so just to make this very clear, he said, these are his words, I'm going to adjust my educational curriculum. And I would say this are my words, not his. I don't know whether he is the adjuster of the curriculum, but that's what he said. I'm going to adjust my educational curriculum to what business and commerce needs to our kids. Jobs to get our kids jobs as opposed to moving back in with their parents after graduation with debt. What we are teaching in these courses for is nothing that'll help them get a job. And then he went on to say, but if you want gender studies, that's fine. Go to a private school and take it. But I don't want to subsidize that if it's not going to get someone a job. Well, the problem is that his view is likely reflected in the legislative leadership that may be more conservative than he is. So how do you respond to that?
I think the most important issue in facing higher education is dealing with this value proposition. Are we, in our great publics, creating students and preparing for the future? Our mission has always been create critical knowledge, be the innovation generators for new business and changes and advances in culture and civilization, and then create the workforce best prepared to advance. I believe deeply that places like Carolina amongst the best in the nation, does that extremely well. We bring these bright students in, we give them an incredible breadth of understanding, and then we give them depth. Each one of them has a major, sometimes two majors, that have detailed skills taking them all the way to the forefront of knowledge in that area, and these skills are deeply transferable. The skills we want for the future are the skills for students that can prepare themselves not for the jobs that are sitting there today, but for the jobs and creating the jobs of tomorrow. If you think about digital world, the jobs that our students are getting now didn't even exist 10 or 15 years ago. So we need to continue what we do is make them extremely prepared to go into the industries of today, but even more so to be flexible and create the industries of tomorrow. Carolina does it. It has a graduation. I saw some statistics recently that said 85% of the students that graduate from Carolina within the first year have full-time jobs or in graduate school. It's up there at the levels of the highest of our elites. We'll continue to press forward on that. And I feel proud of what they're doing post-graduation. And I think they're going to be the people that are helping to bring new economies into the state.
We probably ought to come back and schedule another hour just to talk about money, because at the end of the day, it's income and outgo. Where do you get the money, and then where do you spend it? And so I'm going to try to summarize in the limited time we have here to two things. One is the internal politics. How much time do you spend in Raleigh working the halls of the legislature?
I've been over there several times. I was there when I first came. My second day I went there. And I've also been trying to meet the delegation in Washington. So that's been great. I've also met some people out in the districts when I've been going out around the state. So I see it as very important.
I'm wondering if there may be some good news out of what's I would think it's a safe generalization to say that the more the university can find a way to keep its business out of politics, the better things are. I think that'd be a non-controversial statement. And the politics is local, and local money is typically more likely to be swayed by at least political rhetoric, if not political action. So one of the things that's really happening is I've been watching this over the last few years. Without drowning us in numbers, Raleigh's appropriations and grants have continued to drop from it peaked out in 2008. It's actually $654 million at that time, down to $606 million, down to a drop of $48 million. In that same period of time, the federal government grant support to the university has grown from $550 million to $760 million. So today, you're getting $154 million more from the federal government than you got from Raleigh. So that's an interesting trend, and it appears to be a trend. Well, first of all, do you believe that that trend is likely to continue, that ratio?
I think it will. I think we are seeing a change in the balance of the dollars, where they come from, into the university, and I think that's happened in universities around the country.
And what then might be true, does that make it less political?
You know, I think our mission to educate and create knowledge is really not political. It is what we've been trying to do for 220 years. My goal is to work on those key issues, the way we produce knowledge, the students that we educate, and the value we bring to the community. And I think that is as important to Raleigh as it would have been under any political leadership. My first conversation with Governor McCrory, I said, I want Carolina to be your best story. The piece of Carolina, of North Carolina, that you're most proud of and to do the most for this community, and I still think that's our goal.
Chancellor, speaking of money, we've got lots of infrastructure issues here. When I've studied, each year I study this, and we've got more and more, the amount of work here that's not being done because you don't have the money on crumbling infrastructure seems to me to be something we can talk about a lot. Digital education is a huge issue that's facing the university and all the other things that are changing in the world. So I hope we'll be able to, our time is gone. I hope we'll be able to come back maybe and talk about those things because they are certainly going to have a major impact on, we've talked a lot about where the university is today. I'm not sure we've really had a chance to talk as much about the university of the future as I would like. I hope you'll come back and let us do that again sometime in the future.
Love to do that, Jim. Thank you.
You've been listening to a WCHL News Special with Jim Hefner and UNC Chancellor Carol Folt. You can listen to this interview in its entirety on our website, chapelboro.com. This has been a special presentation of WCHL News.